words came out of his mouth, God says, sovereignty has been removed from you. And I remember a song that some of the kids were singing. It was a VBS song that someone wrote several years ago about Nebuchadnezzar. Grass, grass, all I eat is grass. And they liked singing that. Because for 7 years, Nebuchadnezzar's sanity was lost. This sort of reminds me of the statement we looked at last night in Psalm 139. Before there is a word on my tongue, the Lord knows it all together, David said. And so while these words were coming out of his mouth, he lost his sanity for 7 periods of time, the book of Daniel tells us. But it's interesting, if you go back a couple of verses, there is a time marker given in the text at Daniel chapter 4 and verse 29. 12 months later, he was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon. Okay, so 12 months from what? Well, if you go back earlier in chapter 4, you will find the second major dream that Nebuchadnezzar has. Remember the first dream, that Daniel was the only one that could tell the dream and the interpretation. For some reason, he did not immediately go to Daniel when he had another such dream. He tried again, those who were wise and those who could do those sorts of things in Babylon, and none of them could tell them the meaning of the dream. So finally he says, well, I'm going to have to go back to that Hebrew guy, Daniel. And Daniel comes in and says, this is not favorable to the king. And Daniel was a little bit concerned about having to tell the king that this dream was not favorable to him. And it was about the very events that are going to unfold in the verses that we've read. And only a year has passed since that dream. And Nebuchadnezzar has totally forgot. He's looking out over his kingdom, and says, look at what I did. Look at what I have accomplished. And what Nebuchadnezzar and most others struggle to appreciate is who is really in control. A fact that he will acknowledge when he finally comes to his senses, that there is a sovereign God greater than him who is the greatest king on the earth. Just a couple of thoughts about this as we get to the main thoughts of the lesson tonight. Two things rather quickly. God's activities and purposes are accomplished in His time. The second observation, how quickly we are prone to forget. Just 12 months, time can erode knowledge and faith. I sort of illustrated it this week. Well, it wasn't 12 months, it was 24 months. When I ask you to make that verse your anthem and to memorize it and take it with you, and you struggle to remember it, just 24 months ago. And those of you that weren't here at that time, say, I'm exempt. I didn't fail, I wasn't here. And that's good for you. I should have come up with a test for you for a couple of years from now. But let me get on to something more serious. I think I said this to you the last time that I was here. If you go back in the history of a church 5 years, and I'm going to change this tonight, I'm going to say 2 years, because I was here 2 years ago, and a lot of times if I repeated the place, there's 5 years in between. So I'm going to go back 2 years. I was here in 2017. Was there somebody here 2 years ago who is no longer serving the Lord? I don't even have to have a reply. Because it's almost always true. Now there's two things to that. Number one, what frightens me a lot about that is that if the year 2021 rolls around, there may be somebody here tonight who will be that statistic. who will be a spiritual casualty, who will make shipwreck of the faith. And I'm here to tell you tonight, do not let that be you. It doesn't take long. Nebuchadnezzar forgot something quite significant, an inspired dream from the living God in just 12 months. He is carried away with the arrogance that he was warned about. Just 12 months. And it doesn't take that long. So I want to tell you something about preaching and teaching. As Kevin stands before you on a regular basis and others will stand before you and preach, that the message of reconciliation is one that should be heeded. It's one that's found in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and 6. In fact, the whole theme of 2 Corinthians is be reconciled to God. And at that time, the Corinthians are somewhat estranged from Paul. They not only need to be reconciled to God, they need to be reconciled to His messenger. And they are restrained in their affections. And so he says, be reconciled to God. I think that's the constant message that has to be delivered to straying sheep. Be reconciled to God. And that's why sermon themes are somewhat repetitive at times. That's why warnings about destructive thinking and behavior must consistently be uttered. That's why self-examination must be constantly encouraged and reminders of ultimate realities versus fleeting allurements must be given in preaching. I am doing this all the time, and I know Kevin is too, because it's necessary. And my preaching this week has involved those things. So let me talk to you very briefly about four keys to successful changes and spiritual growth over time. Four things that you need to be focused on so that you're headed and stay headed in the right direction. Number one, and they all begin with A, which I like. Always time for a good alliteration. Alliteration begins with A, by the way. Anchoring. Anchoring. You've got to stay anchored in the right habits and practices as God's child. And one of the things you have to do is to stay anchored among the Lord's people of whom you are a part. Supply your part. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 16. You need to be anchored in the activities and worship of the Marion Street Church or wherever you're a member. Don't ever let that mooring, don't ever let that anchor come up out of the water and become negligent. Secondly, you must constantly be about the business of looking at yourself honestly and objectively and saying, where am I? Am I in a good place spiritually? Am I progressing or declining? Am I languishing or thriving? Am I zealous or lukewarm? Am I communing with God on a regular basis? Am I looking into His Word on a regular basis? And may I recommend, if you can't sit down daily and read 3 to 4 chapters of the Bible, would you just read 4 or 5 verses and reflect on the meaning of those verses in your life and circumstances? And as I mentioned, communing, you must always be about appealing to God for help and strength and perseverance in your circumstances. And wherever you see yourself not in step as a child of God should be with the righteousness of God, you must make adjustments. You've got to make corrections. You've got to attune yourself. You just can't keep aimlessly wandering through life. Anchoring, assessing, appealing, and attuning. I want to share this with you quickly. This is actually from another lesson altogether. But I want to talk to you about 7 steps to change. First of all, change begins as a Christian by a dramatic decision that I'm no longer going to serve myself, but I'm going to serve the Lord. and you do an about face and you say, the Lord is going to dictate my circumstances, the way I think and the way I live. And from that, there is daily remembrance of who I'm called to be and who I serve. I think of Him every day, and there will be spiritual activity that commences. The Word will be allowed to control who I am and what I say and what I do. And I'm going to grow incrementally in the likeness of Jesus Christ, to possess His mind. And I'm going to experience small successes as I take these steps. And in the midst of it all, I know that the victory is to live by faith today. All right, just something I wanted to share with you. Let's get back to Nebuchadnezzar. I think it's a little bit difficult for us to appreciate what it would have been like to have been King Nebuchadnezzar. To have been the most important man in the world. To be revered as the most powerful man in the world. To be in the limelight. To have all the cameras focused on you. I know they didn't have cameras at the time, but if they did, they would have been focused on him. This is not really the experience of most of us. Several years ago, Adele was on her last singing tour. I don't know if she's ever going to produce an album again, but she has a really powerful voice, a beautiful voice. Somebody said, well, I don't know who Adele is. Hello? And some of you are chuckling because you know that's one of her famous songs. She was coming to Houston, and several of the females in our congregation wanted to get together and buy tickets and go see Adele. They had to buy the tickets 1 year in advance. She's used to crowds like this, fawning all over her ability. You ever experienced anything like this? I've been in a crowd like that. At a concert or at a ball game, you know, when everybody is standing and cheering for their favorite football team. 80,000, 100,000 people cheering for the Gladiators of the Gridiron. But has this ever been your experience? I'm sorry if it hasn't been. I got to tell you, when I was in the fourth grade, some of you have asked me where I grew up, Southern Indiana. When I was in the fourth grade, I was the county champion in wrestling for my weight class. Don't I look like a wrestler? I was a county champion. Well, here's the thing. I was in the tiniest weight class of all the weight classes of wrestling. I only had to beat one guy in the whole county to be the county champion. The second year, my fifth grade year, I moved up a weight class. I remember halfway through the year telling my dad, I don't want to wrestle anymore. He said, son, you're going to finish what you start. A little parenting tip there for you. You're going to finish what you start. You're going to have to see it through to the end of the year. And so I did. And when it came time for the county championship to be won, there were four people in my weight class, and I lost in the finals to the guy I'd beaten the year before. That was my moment of glory. County champion in the fourth grade, and nobody goes to wrestling matches. My mom and dad were in the audience, as I remember, and that's about it. I played tennis in high school, but again, none of the students came to tennis matches. It was just my mom and dad. This has never been my experience. When I wrote this lesson, a tragedy had unfolded when the first Heisman winner of the last 47 lost his life. His name was Rashan Salaam. running back from Colorado. He died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And I thought about him in relation to this story. Here was a guy that everyone used to cheer for. Here was a Heisman Trophy winner. He had a somewhat successful pro career. And now, he doesn't even have a will to live. Whatever this limelight is, it can be very temporary. How many great comedians have you known, whether it's Jim Carrey or Robin Williams or whoever it is, and as they get older and begin to age, they're not in the limelight like they once were. This is a very temporary stage. And so whatever you might experience in the world in terms of making your splash, be advised. It doesn't last very long. It's very temporary. And Nebuchadnezzar found out for a 7-year stretch that it can go pretty bad pretty quickly if God determines it. And Nebuchadnezzar hasn't been king of Babylon for 2.5 millennia. The time is short. So I want to talk to you for a second about, well, maybe the crowds have never cheered much, but when the crowds stop cheering. And I'm reminded of the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus talked about the wise man that built his house. How's that go, young people? Built his house upon the rock. And when the winds and the storms come, the wise man's house stands firm. But the foolish man, the man who does not include God in his plans, the man who does not listen to the wisdom of Jesus as he teaches the Sermon on the Mount, his house goes splash. That's not a kid's story. Or we should say it's not just a kid's story. That's an adult story. So I want to talk to you for a second about how to regard the fleeting moments of your lives. 3 quick observations and we'll be done tonight. When the crowds stop cheering, it doesn't take long to lose your way spiritually. The first thing that I would tell you to do is to enjoy the moments of your life. I miss it, that occasion in my life when my children were small. Thankfully, I knew at the time that it would be fleeting. I just didn't know how fleeting it would be. I lapped it up. I made the most of it. When my son was a senior in high school, I spoke about some of the freedoms that we do have as preachers that I appreciate. When my son was a senior in high school and he was about to go off to Florida College, he was on the golf team at Tomball High School, and I was able to go to almost every golf tournament that he played and walk 18 holes with him and share that experience. And I got to know all of his golf buddies. All of them came to his wedding. And it was a special experience that I will never forget. I tried to enjoy every moment. I took Brett with me everywhere preaching the gospel. He was my AV guy. I used to have to carry my own projector when I first started using PowerPoint. Churches didn't have it. And so Brett was my AV guy. And he'd set it up for me and tear it down after it was over. We made some incredible memories together in gospel meetings. But the time is short. And we don't know what lies in front of us. And that's what Solomon is saying in Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Man does not know his time. Like a fish caught in a net. A bird caught in a trap. It happened suddenly. And this impressed him, he says in Ecclesiastes chapter 9. So what your hands find to do, do it with your might. Learn to be content in your circumstances, whether they're good or whether they're bad. Think on things that are pure. Paul says in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8, and can I share these verses with you? I found them a while back in Psalm 62. My soul, wait in silence for God only, for my hope is from Him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I shall not be shaken. On God, my salvation and my glory rest, the rock of my strength. My refuge is in God. Trust in Him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before Him. God is a refuge for us. Maybe that's your assignment. Get familiar with Psalm 62, verses 5 through 8. And know this, when the crowds of this world stop cheering, when the vitality of youth is gone, when you face inevitably the process of aging and the prospect of death, as I went to see Walter this week with Buddy, Walter was baptized in the meeting that on the last night when I was here 2 years ago. And I've heard he's been a stalwart since, attending among the Lord's people in this place. Walter is older. He's not who he was 2 years ago. And that time is coming for all of us. And so when this world doesn't have a use for you like it once did, know that as you draw your fleeting breath, that there is a crowd that still cheers you on. It is a great cloud of witnesses that has already gone to glory, who blaze the trail of faith before us and admonish us as if they are sitting in an arena looking down upon us, we who are still in the race, as they admonish us to run the race that is set before us, laying aside every weight. I think sometimes as Christians, we don't want there to be any weights, any difficulties, any challenges, any hurdles. There are. Lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily entangles us as we run this race. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, He blazed the trail like no other, who for the joy set before Him endured the cross and despised the shame and sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high. And the great cloud of witnesses, all of those men and women, those individuals of faith that we've read about in the previous chapter, they are telling you that you can make it to the finish line. And they're cheering you on. Even if other crowds in this world disapprove of your righteous conduct, they disapprove of your fidelity and faithfulness to the Lord and try to discourage you, remember, these are the peers that matter. And for that joy set before Him, there is a crowd that cheers eternally. And you need to be numbered among that throng, and you must not miss it. These are those that came out of the great tribulation. God is in their midst. The Lamb is in their midst, and He wipes away every tear from their eyes. He supplies all of their needs. They have no hunger. They have no thirst. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Luke 23 and verse 1. You need to be numbered in that great throng. And whatever you must do, you must persevere. Blessed is the man who perseveres. And count it all joy when you encounter various trials, James says, that you will receive a crown of life. Nebuchadnezzar had his crown. He had his time. He had his moment. He was great and powerful and mighty. But did he receive the eternal crown that is worth infinitely more than all that he built and all that he possessed and all the power that he had? So I ask you this. Which awards really matter? Which crowds really matter? Why are you here tonight? Why am I up here? Well, really, it's about this question. Will you be numbered among the blessed an exalted throng at God's throne? I was talking to one of our sisters tonight about Brother J.R. Bronger. I'd known J.R. for a long time, but hadn't spent any time with J.R. of any significance until I held a meeting in Danville, Indiana a couple of years ago, and I got to stay with J.R. and Sue Bronker. J.R. has a million stories. He's got more than Wayne has. He's got a million stories. And I'll not forget one he told while I was there. J.R.'s a runner. Now, he's a little bit older than I am, but he still runs avidly, and he will run many marathons. And he talks about running a mini marathon. As he was beginning the race, he saw another fella and struck up a conversation. After all, J.R.'s a sanguine. And so he strikes up a conversation with this fella he'd never met before, and the guy said, "Well, it's the first marathon I've ever run." Oh, and he encouraged him, you know, as he'd done it several times before, and they took off and they ran the race, and he sees the guy after the race is over. And he said, "How did you do?" He said, "Well, when the race started, I was running from mile marker to mile marker." And he said, "But you know, as the race wore on, I started going from stoplight to stoplight. And as it went on a little further, I was going from block to block." He said, "I was nearly dead at the end. And I was just running from crack to crack." And sometimes in our lives as Christians, we just have to keep running from crack to crack. After I left the meeting here 2 years ago, it was December, and I was visiting my parents in Tampa, Florida. I was supposed to come home in a day and a half. And I got a phone call at 10 o'clock at night from one of our elders, Mike Moriarty. And the first words that came out of his mouth were, "Tony Whalen has been killed." Whalen Melton was one of our elders. He had met with Mike earlier that night at the building to speak to a young couple who were encountering a problem. And as he left the church building, he pulled out at a very dangerous place next to a railroad track. And a drunk driver going over 70 miles an hour flew over that railroad track and hit him in the driver's side door, and he was killed instantly. And Brother Mike was just leaving the building and he heard the crash and was the first to reach the scene. See Brother Whalen. No longer with us. It was a huge loss for our group. Whalen had only been with us a couple of years. But I'll tell you, Whalen was an awesome man. He was a larger-than-life Texan like Bill Murph. When I preached, he would sit back over to my right, and he would say, "Amen, brother. Preach on." I would say, "I need to wrap this up." He'd say, "Keep going." Everybody loved how vocal Whalen was. He loved the preaching of God's Word. Since his passing, the younger men decided they were going to carry his legacy. We have more men saying amen. But it's not like Brother Whalen was. He had a knack for it. He was awesome. Just before he died, he was teaching a new members class. And he talked about his days as a police officer and the perils that accompanied that task, that work. And he told the people in that class just a few days before his death, he told them, "What I learned as a police officer is that you just have to be faithful today. Because you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. So every day that you wake up, you just know, I just have to be faithful today. I will never know why Waylon was taken from us. I've heard his wife say that in a Bible class. People tell me this and say this. And she goes, I don't know the why. But I know this. Waylon is better off than me. Waylon has gone to his reward. So where are you? 12 months can take a toll. If the Lord wills that you live another year, will you lose sight of things that could cost you your soul? And where are you right now? Are you ready to meet the Lord right now, tonight? Can we help you? Come to the Lord while there's time and opportunity. Let's stand and sing.